on your commute, on your walk, on your couch. With the WSHU app, you can stream your favorite shows, check playlists, and catch up on podcasts anytime. Plus, you can send us feedback right in the app. Tell us what you love or what you'd like more of. Download the WSHU app free on the App Store or Google Play.
This is WSHU's After All Things with daily news and culture from around Long Island Sound. LIRR workers are on strike. Ryan Fazio is Connecticut Republicans' nominee for governor. A landmark food transparency law in New York awaits the governor's signature. Plus, it's the latest from WSHU's The Making of Us. Those stories and more are coming up. I'm Sabrina Garone. New York Governor Kathy Hochul is urging leaders of the LIRR labor unions to get back to the negotiating table. Railroad workers went on strike at midnight Friday after marathon negotiations failed. WSHU's Desiree Diorio has more.
The sticking point has been the amount and pace of wage increases in a new four-year contract for five labor unions who represent about 3,500 workers. Hochul says the MTA has made multiple generous offers.
We believe in working men and women receiving a fair wage and benefits. But the MTA cannot agree to a contract that would raise fares as much as 8% and risk hiking taxes for Long Islanders. I have worked too long and hard to reduce costs for our residents, and I will not allow that to be undone.
Union leaders say the raises offered have been inadequate. Until a deal is reached, the MTA is urging Long Islanders to work from home if they can. Desiree Diorio, WSHU News.
Connecticut Republicans have chosen State Senator Ryan Fazio as their nominee for governor. WSHU's Molly Ingram reports from this weekend's convention.
Fazio had an easier path to victory than he expected at the beginning of the week. Frontrunner Erin Stewart dropped out the day before the convention, amid allegations she misused her city-issued credit card as mayor of New Britain. 36-year-old Fazio says if elected, he'll lower electric bills and taxes for the middle class, and end so-called pro-immigration sanctuary policies that limit cooperation between federal agents and local police.
We are waging this campaign to bring people together, to create affordability, and to restore the promise of the Connecticut dream.
Fazio's running mate will be Matt Corey, who unsuccessfully challenged Senator Chris Murphy in 2024. Former New York Lieutenant Governor Betsy McCoy dropped out of the running for governor after falling short in the first round. Molly Ingram, WSHU News.
Connecticut Governor Ned Lamont won the endorsement of the State Democratic Party to run for a third term, but he faces a primary challenge in August from State Representative Josh Elliott, a progressive Democrat from Hamden who won 25% of the delegates at the party's convention Saturday. WSHU's Ebong Udama has more.
Lamont claims the 74% of delegates who've supported him in the convention are a very strong vote of confidence on his accomplishments in his two terms in office. He says he'd prefer to run for a third term without a primary challenge.
If the Democrats are united now, we're in a much better position in the fall. If we're united in the fall, that's good too. But what I worry about is the nature of a lot of these primaries gets very personal, personal attacks, tearing people apart. Sometimes it looks like, my opponent has taken a playbook from some of the Republicans, the attacks they're making.
But more than 25% of the delegates voted for Elliott, giving him enough support to be on the ballot for the August 11th Democratic Party primary. Elliott says it's given him confidence that he could defeat Lamont. In the meantime, the 41-year-old lawmaker is hedging his bets. He's also running for re-election to his seat in the state legislature, though he says he's not raising or spending any money on that campaign. Ebong Udama, WSHU News.
And speaking of political campaigns, we'll take a deep dive into the money behind them on the latest from WSHU's The Making of Us. That's ahead. Stay here. Connecticut State Police say they arrested 100 people in breaking up a massive cockfighting ring in Tollant. They also seized nearly $100,000 and euthanized hundreds of birds due to what they call deteriorating conditions. A new study ranks New York State almost dead last in the nation for affordability. The report from the Common Sense Institute puts the Empire State at number 48, mainly due to lingering inflation from the COVID pandemic. Before COVID, New York ranked 36th. Milford's public school system is planning a nearly $1.5 billion overhaul. It'll include closing two elementary schools and a middle school, along with two new schools and dozens of renovations. A landmark food transparency law in New York has made it through the legislature and is now awaiting review by Governor Kathy Hochul. Now, advocates are pushing lawmakers to approve several more bills on the topic. The New York Public News Network's Samuel King reports the measure faces strong opposition from the food industry.
Advocates are seeking passage of bills requiring disclosures about sodium and sugar content in restaurant offerings, as well as legislation targeting food dyes and aggressive marketing to children and teens. Senate Health Committee Chairman Gustavo Rivera, a Bronx Democrat, says the bills are all about making sure people can make healthy choices about food.
High rates of obesity, of diabetes, of heart disease, of hypertension, all of these things are made worse by what we have in front of us every single day, all the time.
The food industry has strongly opposed many of the proposals, including the one already approved, saying the actions would lead to higher costs for consumers and business owners. Megan Enslow is with the Center for Science and the Public Interest, which has backed the food transparency bills.
They're using that as a fear-mongering tactic to scare the legislature away from signing this. We did it anyways. They're pouring a ton of money into fighting this bill. We passed it anyways.
The bill on sodium in restaurant servings has passed the Senate and is in assembly committees. The other bills are still awaiting committee votes. In Albany, I'm Samuel King for the New York Public News Network.
Political campaigns in the U.S. are expensive, and the price is only going up. For this week's episode of The Making of Us, WSHU's Molly Ingram explores how much is poured into each race, who's paying, and who's left behind.
I want you to guess. Think of a number. How much money was spent in the 2024 campaign cycle? We elected a president, 435 U.S. representatives, and 34 U.S. senators. If you guessed $5 billion, you'd be wrong. It was closer to $15 billion. That's more than some yearly state budgets. Joanna's Denise is the deputy director of the Elections and Government Program at the nonprofit Brennan Center for Justice. She says the money mostly comes from super wealthy donors and special interest groups.
In 2024, about $1.9 billion came from dark money groups that aren't required to disclose their donors.
250 years ago, candidates mostly relied on their own personal wealth to finance campaigns. By the early 20th century, corporate contributions to political campaigns were banned. Special interest groups formed political action committees, or PACs, to raise money for the candidates they supported. But they could only accept a limited amount from each donor. The ban stood until 2010, when the Supreme Court released their landmark Citizens United decision, ruling that corporations could give unlimited amounts of money to campaigns.
The result has been that we've seen an explosion of private wealth in our elections to a degree that we really have not seen in the modern era.
After Citizens United, super PACs came into play. Unlike traditional PACs, they can't donate directly to candidates, but they can accept an unlimited amount of money from donors and spend it on advertising for the races they support. They're supposed to be regulated by the Federal Election Commission, but Denise says the FEC has been ineffective at policing them.
An increasing trend that we've seen since 2010 is that candidates are frequently working in alignment with these nominally outside entities that are allowed to take in unlimited amounts of money and to spend unlimited amounts in support of their favored candidate or in opposition to an opponent.
Denise says the explosion of private campaign funding hasn't benefited everyday Americans or candidates who want to run campaigns without big donors.
The influence of wealth in government impacts how government responds, who has access to office, whose concerns and priorities are heard.
Public campaign financing exists in 14 states, including Connecticut and New York.
Each program is different, but generally, small donations are matched with public funds. A public campaign finance program exists for presidential races, but John McCain was the last to use it in 2008, before the Citizens United decision.
The realities of what it takes financially to run for office and the kinds of enormous outside spending that we're seeing in elections has really changed the tune there.
Candidates across the political spectrum have taken pledges to avoid taking money from super PACs and pledged to push for campaign finance reform laws. It's not a top priority for either of the major parties right now. Molly Ingram, WSHU News.
For the latest from around Long Island Sound, listen on the radio, online at WSHU.org, or download the free WSHU app. Thanks to all of you who donated during our pledge drive last week. If you didn't get a chance to donate, there's still time. Visit WSHU.org and click on the donate button up at the top. And thanks to Molly Ingram for filling in for me on Friday. I'm Sabrina Garone. Have a great rest of your day, and I'll speak with you tomorrow.